Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
What's up, everybody? It's Owen. It's a very special podcast for me today. It's episode 100. We've gone through 100 of these things, and I've been in every one of them, so I'm pretty excited to give you guys a little bit of an extended introduction. The interview with Tim Walsh, head coach for Cal Poly football, is coming up. We've done 100 of these Fansmanship.com podcasts. Some of them have been in the style of just me, Luke, and Andy, kind of BSing about whatever the latest sports topics are. Other podcasts, maybe about 50-50. Other podcasts have included interviews with some people in the sports world, both within San Luis Obispo County and at Cal Poly, and also outside of San Luis Obispo County throughout California. We've had local people from like ESPN Radio 1280, Mike Wozniak, CJ Silas. We've had TV sports anchors like Bill Halter and Matt Santa Maria from KSBY. We've had people who cover professional teams like the Dodgers. We had Eric Steven from True Blue LA, which is the SB Nation site for the Dodgers. We had Joe Totino, who is the play-by-play announcer for the Galaxy. And I just really want to thank all these people who I'm listing off because they're really the people who make this podcast a little bit more interesting. If it was just me, I don't think it would be definitely not half as interesting as it definitely has been. We've had a lot of Cal Poly guests over time. We've had some former players like Drake Uyu and Dylan Royer. We had Chris Eversley on, Chris O'Brien, all from the basketball program. We've had Sullivan Gross on from the football program. We've also had lots of coaches. Joe Calero has been on twice, the head basketball coach. The women's basketball coach, Faith Mimna, has been on. Sam Crossan, Larry Lee, the Cal Poly baseball coach. Of course, Coach Lee's team went and hosted a regional this year and was ranked number one in the nation at one point. So we had Coach Lee on a couple of years ago. And athletic director Don Oberhelman, along with this podcast, which is the first time that head coach Tim Walsh of the Cal Poly football team has been on as well. We've had also kind of some niche guests as well. We've had some hobbyists, guys who are in deep into the world of RC jets and talking about California jets, which is something we've covered a few times. I want to give special thanks to Miles Davis from LPMD. Guys, if you want to hear a pretty good hip-hop group, Longinus Parsons III and Miles Davis make up LPMD. They're the ones who are responsible for our intros and outros. They're of the hip-hop variety. I would also encourage you to look up Lady Rider, which is the song at the end, Trouble Town. Thanks to Patrick for that. I also want to thank Luke and Andy because they're the ones who got this thing started with me, and they still are contributors. They're still partners in Fansmanship.com. I'm really excited about the future of our site. I also want to thank probably our most frequent guest, besides obviously Luke and Andy, who aren't guests. Our most frequent guest has been J.D. Scroggin from the San Luis Obispo Tribune. And so I want to have special thanks to J.D. as well for coming on and BSing about local sports and also BSing about random stuff like Long John Silver's, which might be the worst fast food restaurant in the world. With that being said, and without further ado, I'm about 4 minutes deep into this thing, so I'm going to go ahead and start the interview. Again, thanks to everybody who's listened over the past 100 episodes. If you have any ideas, if you want to hear anybody in particular, if you have any comments or questions or anything else, feel free to just get in touch with us. You can find us on Twitter at Fansmanship. You can find us on Facebook. And also, you can email me, Owen, at fansmanship.com. Like I said, without further ado, here's Tim Walsh on the eve of Cal Poly beginning their training camp this year. Another quarterback battle is the quarterback position's up for grabs this year, and we're really excited about the season this year. Got to talk to Tim Walsh and ask him some questions about the upcoming season. How do you kind of put away a kind of subpar season for Cal Poly from last year, kind of mediocre, and what's it going to take for them to take that next step back into the FCS playoffs this year? Tim Walsh, episode 100 on the fansmanship.com podcast. Here with Tim Walsh, Cal Poly football head coach, on the eve of the first day of practice. How are you feeling about kind of how things are progressing over the summer? Are there still some things that you're kind of frantically working on today? Are you guys mostly ready to go? How's that been for you the last couple of days?
I think we're mostly ready to go, and obviously there's a lot of excitement. I mean, I've been doing this long enough to know that the beginning of each season is a different season for the coaches, which means myself, which makes it exciting, but most importantly for the players. And I think the players are really feeling the 2014 season upon them now, and I think that that's what makes it exciting for us.
How long does it take to, like, shake off a season like last year? I mean, a season where you guys were probably, like, one kind of dud game and two plays away from being, you know, a kind of a shoe-in playoff team, probably. How long does that take to shake off, and kind of what do you talk to your players about kind of at the end of last year and through the offseason?
Well, I think, you know, you got to look back on things, and I'm a big person that, you know, you can look back on things to learn from it, but not to dwell on it. I mean, not to look back and say, oh, poor us, woulda, shoulda, coulda, but more what could have we done better? And I think we've identified some things. I mean, both from an emotional front, I think our players now understand that, you know, we're good, but we're not that good where we can just show up and play a game because anybody can beat us. And I think, no offense, Yale proved that last year. But I was really proud about the way we came back and played as hard as we played against Montana and played as hard as we can against Northern Arizona. But if you really look at those two games, there's two glowing plays in those games that were both special teams plays. So there'll be a big emphasis on special teams this fall camp. And hopefully we'll learn from it. Hopefully we'll be better. But all the teams we play are going to be better and have that same thing too and that same opportunity to improve. So if you look back on it and you said 5-3 and fourth place in the Big Sky and 7-1 and tied for a championship in our first 2 years, pretty good. But we'd like to get back to that 7-1, 8-0 cycle.
Right. I had a pretty interesting opportunity last year to go to spring training, talk to some Dodgers and some veterans there, and they talked about you can't make it too big of a grind during spring training. Of course, baseball, you know, you play 162 games, you're playing every day, but the football season is not a short season either. It starts right now and it goes through, you know, hopefully for you guys, you know, December, January even. What are some things that you do, like, personally to kind of try to take some time off in the off season, and how do you kind of keep it from being too big of a grind? Or is football just totally different? Do you just have to, like, be a grinder every day? Are there ever things that you do to kind of try to take away from that kind of grind?
Well, I think starting now, I really have the reins on our coaches. Our coaches want to go full bore ahead, and sometimes as a coach you forget what it was like to be a player. And the player, that's, you know, this next 16, 17 weeks is a grind. And the team that survives it is going to be the freshest team in week 16, 17 when you get there. So I think it's kind of my job to make sure that, you know, we have all this enthusiasm on our coaching staff, all the enthusiasm that our players have when we start. But I have to harness all that stuff, and I have to rein it in a little bit and make sure that we stay as fresh as we can each week. I mean, I'll use Cristiano Ivory as an example. You know, if he plays, then he probably only played 8.5 games last year. If he plays those other games, Northern Arizona and Montana, healthy, those games might have different outcomes. Right. So I think we have to look at it that way. And then the other thing, I think in the off season, I try to get our coaches out of the office. I don't want them here, you know, not from 7 to 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, do your job and get out of here, spend some family time, get away, have a vacation, and make sure you're fresh. And I think the same thing's true for your players. You know, when they get through the finals, I think you got to give them some time off. So really, we don't start hitting it really hard back as far as team lifting and team running until really July 5th.
Yeah, I think I was talking to you last winter, I think, and you guys do have kind of a youngish staff, a staff with families. You gave me like a number of kids. It was staggering. Maybe you can kind of revisit that for me. I thought it was really interesting. But you do have kind of a young, vibrant staff with a lot of energy. How does that translate, you know, for you in terms of, like you said, trying to, like, rein those guys in, and do coaching staffs develop like players do too, you know, over time, as well?
Oh, there's no question that your chemistry comes together. Now, for the most part, we've been together for the last couple of years, and five guys played for me. So, I mean, I think we have a knowledge of each other that's probably an advantage for us, even though that we're somewhat youthful. But I still think that sometimes your youthful energy, your youthful knowledge is sometimes need to be reined in, like I said, and made sure that we are doing the things that we need to do and being specific about what we need to do on offense, defense, and special teams to make sure we give our players the best opportunity to win. And like I said before, remember what it was like to be a player. You know, it's a long, long, long time ago for guys like myself, but for some of our coaches, it's only 9-10 years ago, and I think that they still look at it like, you know, from a player's perspective as far as their energy right now, but it's the ability to maintain it as a coach for 17 weeks and maintain your players at that high level for 17 weeks that we're looking for.
Right. So one thing, and last season, you know, you had people sometimes that I would talk to who were critical for one reason or another, and something I'm telling, you know, of whether it's like, you know, play calling or decision making. I mean, you get knuckleheads all the time out there who, and I don't know anything about anything, but one thing I say is, you know, you had some coaches last year, or the last couple of years, kind of in their first year doing whatever they were doing in whatever position they were, and I think one thing that I'm looking at this year is kind of development in some of those things. Maybe, you know, just like you expect a sophomore to develop into a junior and a guy who's playing more. What do you think about that? Like, what's your take on that in terms of a coaching staff developing too?
Yeah, well, there's no question. The coaching staff develops and their knowledge develops, and they look at things they're doing and how they're doing. I mean, and try to become more specific on how they teach things, which is only going to make the players better players. I mean, if you take a class here and you have the best teacher in economics, you're probably going to get a pretty good learning curve out of that for yourself if you take advantage of it. And that's the same thing that's true in football. If we teach it properly, then it's going to be received properly. And that's how, you know, I think education in any form takes place. But I think, you know, as far as all the other things, I mean, who we are, you know, people have to understand who we are. And who we are is, you know, we're playing in a league. We're a 2.0 and 740 SAT guy. We're going to play against that guy. And so Eastern Washington's got six or seven guys that can play in the Pac-12. You know, and I think that, you know, those are the teams you're trying to compete with. So what we've done is try on offense to find ways to make sure that we can play up to those types of athletes that we may play against. And really, if you look at it, I mean, if you lead the nation in rushing, it's not a bad thing. If you're in a lot of top categories on defense, probably a pretty good deal. So I think we've done good things. And I think it gets down to, you know, it was my job to market our program by trying to throw the ball 50 times a game, or is our job to market our program by trying to be a winning championship program on and off the field? And hopefully we can be a winning championship team in all phases. Now, do we want to throw the ball better? We do.
Yeah.
And there's no question. But that doesn't happen overnight. And it's a process. And the two quarterbacks this year both should be better players. So we're looking forward to seeing what they can do.
Yeah. Kind of going to the offensive side of things. In the triple option, you know, and again, you're talking to somebody who doesn't really know anything in me. But when I watch games, I kind of one thing I look at, and you can tell me if I'm wrong to look at it, but I always look at the number of touches that first guy gets, the Akinine Umo, the Jake Romanelli, you know, whoever you're talking about. How many touches does that guy get throughout the game, whether you guys are moving the ball or not, and then productivity in the second half on being able to kind of go off of that or play off of that. And I know you guys kind of went outside in sometimes last year instead of inside out. How big of a deal is it to have a guy or a number of guys in that role who can kind of get yards, but also have the will to kind of give it to that guy over and over and try to kind of wear the other team down on some level?
Well, I think it goes back to the process of the evolution of who we are. I think 2 or 3 years ago, we had Mark Rogers and Deontay. Right. And there were times when teams would take them away and we couldn't get them the ball. So therefore, it limited what you were doing by who they decided to take away. And so now what we've done is we've come up a way to get the ball to the perimeter a little bit better with some of our skill players. And, you know, Deontay's year season a year ago, and even Kristan, you have 8.5 games, 1,100 yards. That's a lot of yards. Right. So we want to get the ball into the guys' hands for the most part that might be able to make some 75-yard plays. Chris Brown can do that. I think Dano can do that. I think the Kristan Ivory definitely can do that. So we need to do that. If you look at our Montana game last year, we hand the ball to the guy behind all the way down the field for 7 minutes and miss a field goal because you were getting 3 and 4 yards a chunk. So one of the things we try to do is we have tried to create some plays where we know we can give the ball to this guy and that guy has the ability to turn a play into a 70-yard touchdown.
Right. So to kind of quick strike and to actually get a touchdown out of it. I know you're a big proponent of touchdowns, not field goals, right?
No question. The points win games. And in my math, 7 beats 3 every time. So we're going to try to score as many touchdowns as we can. And that's an area that, you know, I think we were down it a little bit, probably about 6 points a game last year. And, you know, if we're averaging 35 points a game last year, then maybe we do beat Montana. Maybe we do beat, you know, Northern Arizona. So, you know, the touchdown thing and the explosiveness of our offense is something we're definitely conscious of.
Got it. You talked about field goals, so I'm just going to ask, what's the kicking situation for you guys?
Well, we think that, you know, we think that on the kicking thing, it's going to be by committee. I mean, there's no question. Stephen Pyle's extremely accurate, but he doesn't have an extremely strong leg. So, you know, he's probably going to be handling the PATs and the mid-range to 30-yard, maybe 35-yard field goals. And then Sam Boyden, I think, is an incredibly talented young man. But he has to get his confidence level and his mind right. He's worked with a guy all summer. Paul Assad is his kicking coach up north. And I've gotten great reports. I've seen some film of him that's been sent back to us. It sure looks like he's ready to be the guy we think he could be. So I think that, you know, I think the kicking game is going to improve. It's going to be better than it was in the spring. But Sam Boyden, if he plays consistently, he's got the ability to continue to play after he finishes here.
Okay. For fans, you know, the quarter, talking about kind of positions that are still up for grabs, for fans, the quarterback situation last season was definitely interesting to watch, but having to play four or five guys is definitely not something I know that you want to do. You talked about, you know, not wanting that to happen, and ended up, because of injuries and other things, kind of being the way that, I mean, I think you played five different quarterbacks last year, including Kenny. Is this year's competition between two or three guys? Is Kai in the mix for it? And how wide open is it? Do you have a starter in mind coming into camp, or what's the situation?
Chris and Dano have both been told they're starting quarterbacks, and that's the way it probably should be. The problem with it is, because of the nature of the offense, there's going to be a time where they're both going to have to play because of injury. I hate to say it.
Because the quarterback carries the ball and they get hit. They're going to get consistently hit,
you know, and I think that that's a little bit of an issue. And that's something we're concerned about. So getting back to, are we going to try to put them in situations where they have to carry the ball a lot? We probably are going to try to minimize that as much as we possibly can without it hurting our efficiency. I think the other issue is that they're different.
Right.
Their strengths are different, which kind of is difficult game planning wise, because you really have a game plan for Chris and then you have a game plan for Dano. And it may look the same to the naked eye, but the game plans are a little bit different. And that is a little bit tough on your offense too. So we're looking to see if we can get those guys to work together to become better competitors, which I think they have been, which are going to help their weaknesses become a little bit stronger. And if both of them do that, I feel very good about the position overall. As far as a starter, I can tell you right now, we will have a starter against New Mexico State.
Somebody will be behind center.
Maybe we'll take that first snap. I don't know who it is yet.
Yeah. How much, I mean, I'm just like reflecting, you know, 2 years later, how amazing is it kind of what Andre Broaddus did in his career in terms of being so durable? I mean, he was a thick guy. I mean, he wasn't a, you know, super small quarterback or anything, but the durability of a guy like Andre, I mean,
part
incredible.
Of his durability was his mental toughness. I mean, he really shouldn't have been playing the last couple of weeks of his senior year. He was hurt. And he would hide it, not do it. I mean, against Northern Arizona, he pitched the ball to his left with his right hand because he couldn't grip the ball with his left hand because he'd had a stinger and he didn't want to say anything. And I said, why'd you do it? And he goes, oh, I can't grip the ball with my left hand. So I told him, I said, better pitch it to our right from now on. But he just had that mental toughness. I think these guys do too, but they don't have the physical stature. I mean, Andre was 5'11", 207, 208 pounds.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Put together. And Chris is 200 pounds now, but, you know, he's 6'1.5". He's kind of long.
Yeah.
And Dano's put together pretty good too, but he's 5'8", you know. So yeah, they're different body types. And I think they all have that ingredient that they're tougher than the game. And if you're 5'8", 180 pounds, it's pretty tough to be tougher than the game. So we got to pick and choose how much we use those guys and allow them to get hit. And even hindsight's 20/20. I mean, Andre missed four or five games in his sophomore year that, I mean, who knows how spectacular his career would have been here if he had played in those games. So we just have to watch how many hits we're going to let those guys take. They won't take very many in practice, that's for darn sure.
Right. Did you ever think about putting any of those guys at skill positions, other skill positions last year? Was that ever like a serious conversation?
With us, it is, but with an athlete, they have to have the want to.
Right.
I think they have the want to help us win games in any way they can. But in order to be a good player and beat out somebody that we already have on the field, you got to have the want to do that. You can't be looking back saying, I should be the starting quarterback if we ask you to go play wide out or go play slot. I mean, we were good enough athletically, even with Vince Moraga. Vince Moraga could have played slot.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guys that could have played different positions. I mean, Tanner was probably the only guy that probably maybe on defense could have helped us because of his mentality. Yeah. But I think those other guys, yeah, that conversation came up a lot. But especially as depth started to – wind down as that season progressed, we kind of felt like, you know, we're not going to put ourselves in any more harm's way.
That was a training camp conversation, more than a week four conversation for sure. Chris Dan, you mentioned your best back last year. He had 1,100 plus yards, caught a lot more passes than he did the year before. But like you said, scored less touchdowns, I think, than the previous year. He was kind of a get in there on third down and score a touchdown guy in his sophomore year. It was pretty amazing what he did there. Aside from the quarterback position, who's been able to like gain your trust to take some of the load off Chris Dan this year, or who are you looking at this camp to kind of start to take some of that load? Because like you said, you want a healthy Chris Dan in week eight, nine, ten. What does that look like for other guys?
Well, I think that, you know, number one, I think Corey Garcia is a good, solid football player, and we kind of feel like he can do everything. So there's a possibility they both be on the field at the same time. I don't think he's as explosive maybe as we'd like him to be, but we'll see how much he's progressed in that area in the offseason when we start this week. And I think Brandon Howe has to have, you mentioned the inside part of the game. I think Brandon Howe is a good runner and has really become a lot more trustworthy with the ball and things like that. So I would expect Brandon to have bigger and better numbers. And as far as backing up or playing with Chris Dan, there's some freshmen that are all sub 11 flat 100 meter guys, and Alex Suchek, Lance Mudd. I mean, those guys are they have the speed that we're looking for at that position, and that's something that, you know, we're probably going to use one of them. There'll probably be a freshman. I'm not sure who it's going to be yet, but I would assume that there'll be a freshman that's going to make a difference. And the other guy that you have to...
Which isn't super usual for you guys. Like, I mean, I was looking at your spring roster and how many guys had redshirted. It was like 75% of the players on there didn't, you know, redshirted as freshmen. So you're talking about a number of freshmen that are...
Yeah, some true freshmen.
Yeah.
Now, Jake Brito, who did redshirt last year, we are expecting big things for him. But the unfortunate thing for Jake was he had a great fall, and then he got hurt in spring and really didn't have a spring. And that spring, I think... It's going to be interesting to see how much he missed mentally in learning what we do. But Jake Brito's got – I'm not saying he's going to be Cole Stanford athletically. I mean, Cole's an NFL athlete. Right. But he's a guy I think that can make a splash for us this year.
Got it. You have to replace two guys who have had looks with the NFL on defense, Sullivan Groves and Johnny Millard in terms of defensive players. But linebacker is generally a position that you guys are usually pretty deep at. Can you talk about – how you guys are replacing those guys this year and what that looks like?
Well, I don't think any question the linebacker, maybe not in large numbers, but in the first five or six guys, is extremely deep. I think that Cameron Otko and Nick DeZubnar are going to be two of the best linebackers in the conference. I think that the transfer Burton DeConing from Nevada and the returner Tuta Anoke are both ready to play and play at a high level here. And Nick Moyer has made huge, huge jumps as far as from where he was 2 years ago to where he is. So that's five. And then Chris Judge comes back. And Chris said last year sat out because of injury and really didn't have a spring. And Chris has just had a tough.
I saw him on crutches at some point, I think, this summer or like last spring. I don't know.
He had a labrum surgery on his hip.
Oh, man.
And he's now back. And he
that had nothing to do with what happened, what kept him out last year, right?
Right, yeah. And we're just hoping he's ready for the, you know, to play week one. We're not sure he's totally all the way back, but we'll progress him through the spring. But that gives you six guys. I think that's a high quality six or seven guys that we have at linebacker. So we're extremely excited about what's there, and their expectations are high. Sullivan Gross for us, you know, is kind of freakish. I mean, I think people have to remember we signed him as a 6'3", 230-pound defensive end, and he grew into a 6'3", 290-pound defensive tackle that could run. And we're not going to, you know, we weren't able to go out maybe and find that size, but Marcus Paige Allen a year ago had a great spring at 5'10", 265, extremely quick, extremely powerful, a different guy. Right. And then the transfer from Wake Forest, Andrew Hauser, we think is going to be a very, very good player, if not a starting player for us, along with the return of Chris Lawrence. So, I mean, I think we're still good. I think the defensive line will still be the thing. I think that I think we have to see how much the youth that we're going to play there is ready to play at the level that we need.
Because you guys got some freshmen that are big bodies too, but your question is, you know, are these guys going to be guys who can step in and play? Do they have to, you know, are you going to maybe have them wait a year, that kind of thing, right?
And I think Fino Elisara probably will play as a true freshman. That's a probability, but we'll see as it goes through. And then at the defensive end position, we're going to be young. You know, I mean, Josh Latuli Gassano will be a sophomore.
Right.
Kelly Shepard, a sophomore. I mean, those guys are going to play.
Right.
And, you know, youth is good, but there's some learned experience that goes with youthful enthusiasm and talent. So that'll be interesting to watch.
You guys have definitely picked your spots in terms of when to take chances on defense, when to bring extra guys. I mean, having Sullivan Groves in the middle kind of makes that a nice luxury to have when you got a guy like that in the middle. Is that something that is kind of a core value for you, or is that kind of dependent on your personnel as well?
Yeah, I think it's personnel driven. And I think, you know, we probably will move a little bit more maybe than we've moved in the past. But, and the same thing, if you take the Eastern Washington game, a lot of people say, well, they beat you pretty good. Well, they probably did. But every one of their plays was a big play.
Right.
They really didn't drive the ball very well against us.
And right.
When they made their plays is when we brought pressure. And they got us in man situations, and they took advantage. Even the long run was a pressure where a guy missed his gap. When you miss a gap and the running back finds it, there's nobody behind it once you decide to do that. So, you know, I think we need to be better at the pressures, but also we have to be better at the disguise part of it too, and when we do it. We can't be consistent on when we're doing stuff. And Eastern did a good job of knowing it, but in reality, I think our base package has been good over the last 3 or 4 years. So it'll still be the nucleus of who we are, but I think you'll see some packages grow.
Kind of that thing about keeping them in front of you, keeping the field goals. I mean,
7-3, seven beats three.
Yeah, right. What's the health situation of your team going into camp? Are there guys that are nicked up already?
Probably not as good as we'd like to. I mean, there's some guys that won't be on the roster to start with because they're not going to be ready and probably until the second or third game. Joe Gigantino, a linebacker that was a Northern California player of the year, we had high expectations for him, has still not come back from the injury that he had against Weber State last year. I mentioned Chris Judge. Jason Patterson got hurt in the spring. He's not going to be ready until probably the second or third week. So there's
second or third week of the season or of camp?
Of the season.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So there's three guys right there that I think are all players that would give us some quality downs that probably aren't going to be ready to play when we play New Mexico State. And then there's some other guys we're going to have to watch. Kristan Ivory, there's a couple of guys that are still coming off of injuries that how much we want to push them in camp still remains to be seen. So I think that, we're not probably as healthy as we'd like to be in week one. The good news is most of the guys that are a little bit nicked up, we know what they can do. And that, you know, if you already know what a guy can do and you have high expectations for him, then hopefully they'll take care of business and be ready to play when you ask him to go 100%.
How about Willie Tucker? He's coming. What's his status? What's his health?
He doesn't feel like he's 100% himself. So, you know, the probability is we'll redshirt him because he does have that year left. And the way we look at the Willie Tucker thing is that there's a lot of good wide receivers out there, but I think he'd be one of the best wide receivers in the Big Sky if he's 100% healthy. So we would rather not push the issue at 85% and maybe have him labor through the year. We'd like to have Willie Tucker at 100%.
He was the one that was getting open against Fresno State and Colorado State last year. I mean,
I hate to say anything, even against Yale, he was open a couple times before he got hurt. So yeah. Willie's an excellent player, and we miss Willie's leadership and his toughness at that position. But he'll be out there probably after our first game. We'll get him on the field again and get him back in.
See how it progresses.
But we probably will not play him this year.
Right. Cameron Onko was you had Nick Dezubnar on the Big Sky preseason team. I saw where he's been named in some preseason teams. But Onko, to me, is like a super underrated and has been for the last couple of years because you've had Johnny and Nick and Cameron's maybe been on the weak side or whatever for whatever reason. He strikes me as somebody who's a lot more talented maybe than he gets credit for. Can you talk about his play? And also somebody maybe like some of those offensive players, you got to keep healthy, right? I mean, he's a guy who seems like he's always giving his whole body out there, you know, to make plays. But then he's not there, you know, for a half a game. Right. It seemed like he was missing half of every game almost or something like that. But
yeah, Cam is a little nicked up. That's another guy that is a little nicked up. Probably going to practice the first day. But you talk about a guy that's an explosive football player. I don't know if we have anybody more explosive than Cameron Onko. And him and Nick are just different guys. I mean, Nick is every bit as tough, physical, and probably the who we want kind of our defense to play like because he just gets as tough and he'll play with one arm and play with no arms if he had to. And
right.
And that's just Nick Dezubnar, and that's what we love about Nick. And Cam is that kind of guy, too, and really follow. I think has followed in Nick's lead. Cam has just been blessed with extremely good, great speed. I mean, he's going to run sub 4.5 40.
He seems like the defensive Cole Stanford almost, like in terms of just his kind of freak athletic.
He's freakish. You know, the only thing he hasn't been given is his height. And if you ask him, he's taller than we say he is, but that's for Cam to say. But he's going to have a big season, and I think that you'll see him and Nick on some all-conference and maybe in some all-American teams when this thing's all said and done.
Great. A couple last questions. I've seen you at other sporting events around here. Culturally, I think that's something. Maybe it's always been the case at Cal Poly that, you know, you see a lot of other teams and a lot of other coaches supporting each other. Is that something that's kind of grown over the last couple of years? And what's your favorite other sport besides football?
Well, I don't think, you know, there's any question that, you know, here, I mean, this is such a great community environment. I think that, you know, I think between our coaches, I think from Don Oberhelman, watching Jeff Armstrong, I think there's a tremendous amount of love and respect for the student-athletes that are here. And from my standpoint, I mean, I got into it because I loved athletics, and my career was coming. I wasn't going to play anymore. And I was fortunate in high school to play baseball, basketball, and football, you know, and play in college, do all that stuff. And I had a daughter that played softball. So sports has been a big part of our lives as a family, as well as, you know, me individually. And I love going to watch young people compete. And it's even more fun when young people compete and win. And this year was a great, you know, a great opportunity to watch some of the things happen in women's basketball, watch some of the things that happened in men's basketball and baseball, obviously, men's tennis. I mean, there was cross country. There's a lot of winners out there this year. And, right. And I think we were part of that the last couple of years. So to be around that environment, I think is great. I also think it's great for the student athletes to see that we all support each other as coaches here. And I think that that's definitely true.
Does that raise kind of the – is there some kind of like competitiveness internally too in terms of saying, hey, you know, the basketball team made the NCAA tournament, the baseball team hosted a regional, we better be on our game here?
Yeah, well, I think it all goes – I think that happens yearly though. I mean, I think, you know, if we won the Big Sky Championship, Joe wants to win the Big West Championship. And, you know, the good news is that we'd all like to win it in the same year, and I'm sure then Don Oberhelman would be extremely happy if we could all get that done in the same year. So every year I just think it's a new year, and the way I look at it is that this, for me, is all about the players. This is their year. I mean, you know, for me, I've done this for 37 years. I've had 37 different teams or whatever it is.
This is your 38th?
Yeah, it's getting up there. I don't even have okay. lost count.
I was going to ask you.
But I think that I know the reason I do it is because of the young people that play the game. So regardless what happened in 2013 in any of the sports, this is the 2014 season for all the sports. Right. And for those guys who are going to be seniors, this is their last deal, man. So I want to see it be a great one and hopefully a championship season.
Yeah. A couple of more quick random questions. What's one thing that people don't know about Tim Walsh, fans don't know about Tim Walsh that you can tell me?
I'm probably a tougher guy on my coaches than I am on my players.
Okay.
And our coaches would probably attest to that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed I was listening on the radio when you and Joe Calero were both on, and you guys were talking about loyalty of assistant coaches. I thought that was a really interesting conversation that you guys had. With that, though, comes that kind of tough love.
I think our coaches, you know, like I said, five of them played for me, so they know me. And I really think if our players aren't playing well, then we have to take responsibility as coaches. So they better have some leather skin if you're going to coach for me.
Awesome. And last question, 37, 38, 30, whatever year it is, describe the feeling of waking up tomorrow, day one of, you know, day one of training camp and knowing that the whole season's ahead of you. What's that feeling like?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's what we do. And when you build a team, you put a team together, you hope you put all the pieces in the right places. So there's some, you know, there's some apprehension and the fact that, you know, but you have to be confident and you have to be excited. Like I said, this is this team's turn. And so when I get up tomorrow morning and I shave, you know, I'm going to look in the mirror and go, wow, I am getting old. But in reality, I'm going to feel just as young and spry as I felt 37, 38 years ago. And I'm going to have that same enthusiasm. And hopefully that'll be contagious to our players and coaches. And there's nothing better than that first day when you walk on the field, because you get a real sense of who you're going to become as a team from that first day of the enthusiasm and how it's contagious. And if you can be extremely enthusiastic day one, that contagious feeling, that feeling can stay with you all year long.
I said the last one was my last question, but I'm going to ask one more. With three guys who signed NFL contracts after last year, what does that kind of a thing do for your program? That's like Cole recently signed with New England. Of course, Sullivan got hurt playing, you know, over in Houston, and Johnny's getting a shot with the Rams, right? So what does that do for your program?
Well, I mean, number one, it validates the fact that you say you can accomplish whatever you want to accomplish here as an athlete. And I think that Johnny has a great chance. I think he's going to make the team. And I think Cole will be interesting. Unfortunately for Sullivan, I think he would have had a really good opportunity to make the team too, but he gets hurt. But you know what the great news is for me? When I go into a home and I talk about the opportunity to play in the NFL, it truly exists. That's one. All three of those guys graduated with business degrees from Cal Poly. And that, to me, is the best story that you can tell a parent. Can he play in the NFL? Yep, we got three guys doing it. Can he get a great degree? He's going to probably get one of the top 4 or 5 degrees you can get at Cal Poly, which is one of the best business schools in the state of California for sure. You know, and I think that that's what we want to teach, and that's what we want people to look at is, yeah, I want to play in the NFL. It's a great goal. But what do you want to do academically, and where do you want to be 7, 8, 9 years from now, too? And those guys are living the mark of who they are. Deontay Williams signed with the Raiders, got released in the last cut, comes back to school, graduates. You know, those are the stories to me that are important because football's going to last, and sometimes it's going to last a little. You know, Asa Jackson's going to be going his 4th year. Ramsey's just got released. It ends, and what are you going to do when it ends? And being prepared for the end of your football career, whether it's after high school, after college, or after 3 or 4 years in the NFL, be ready. And I think if you look at the Cal Poly tradition of Ramsey's Barden, Chris Gocon, you know, those guys all are ready to take the next step in their lives when they finish playing. And that's what I want for Johnny. That's what I want for Sullivan Gross. And that's what I want for Cole Stanford. And they did their part by doing what they did in the classroom as well as the field.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Coach. Appreciate it. Good luck this year.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Front page of the news.